the woman said to him. And into paper coffee cups, she poured May's white and red for herself and her companion. The man sat. They all raised their glasses, and the wine, which May knew was not good, tasted extraordinary. The man was assessing May.
"So you're some kind of adventurer, I take it? Extreme sports and such?"
He drained his cup and reached for the thermos. May expected his mate to look at him disapprovingly, as her mother would have, but the woman's eyes were closed, facing the setting sun. May shook her head. "No, not really at all."
"We don't see that many kayakers out here,"
he said, refilling his cup.
"They tend to stay closer to shore."
"I think she's a nice girl,"
the woman said, her eyes still closed.
"Look at her clothes. She's almost preppy. But she's no drone. She's a nice girl with occasional bursts of curiosity."
Now the man took the role of apologist.
"Two sips of wine, and she thinks she's some fortune teller."
"It's okay," May said, though she didn't know how she felt about the woman's diagnosis. As she looked at the man, and then at the woman's eyes opened.
"There's a pod of gray whales heading up here tomorrow," she said,
and turned her eyes toward the Golden Gate. She narrowed them, as if completing a mental promise with the ocean that, when the whales arrived, they would be well treated. Then she closed her eyes again. Entertaining May seemed to be left to the man for now.
"So how's the bay feel today?"
he asked.
"Good," May said. "It's so calm."
"Calmest it's been this week,"
he agreed. And for a while, no one spoke, as if the three of them were honoring the water's tranquility with a moment of silence. And in the silence, May thought about how Annie, or her parents, would react to seeing her out here, drinking wine in the afternoon on a barge, with strangers who lived on a barge. Mercer, she knew, would approve.
"You see any harbor seals?"
the man finally asked. May knew nothing about these people. They hadn't offered their names and hadn't asked May for hers. Far beyond, a foghorn sounded.
"Just a few today, closer to shore," May said.
"What'd they look like?"
the man asked, and when May described them, their gray glassine heads, the man glanced to the woman.
"Stevie and Kevin?"
The woman nodded in recognition.
"I think the others are further out today, hunting. Stevie and Kevin don't leave this part of the bay too often. They come here all the time to say hello."
May wanted to ask these people if they lived here, or, if not, what exactly they were doing out here on this barge attached to that fishing boat, neither of which seemed functional in any way. Were they here for good? How did they get here in the first place? But asking any of these questions seemed impossible when they hadn't asked her name.
"Were you here when that burned?"
the man asked, pointing to a large uninhabited island in the middle of the bay. It rose, mute and black, behind them. May shook her head.
"It burned for 2 days. We had just gotten here. At night, the heat, you could feel it even here. We swam every night in this godforsaken water just to stay cool. We thought the world was ending."
Now the woman's eyes opened and she focused on May.
"Have you swum in this bay?"
"A few times," May said. "It's brutal. But I used to swim in Lake Tahoe growing up. That's at least as cold as this."
May finished her wine and felt briefly aglow. She squinted into the sun, turned away, and saw a man in the distance on a silver sailboat raising a tricolored flag.
"How old are you?"
the woman asked.
"You look about 11.
24, May said.
"My God, you don't have a mark on you. Were we ever 24, my love?"
She turned to the man who was using a ballpoint pen to scratch the arch of his foot. He shrugged and the woman let the matter drop.
"Beautiful out here," May said.
"We agree," the woman said. "The beauty is loud and constant,"
The sunrise this morning, it was so good. And tonight's a full moon. It's been rising full orange, turning silver as it climbs. The water will be soaked in gold and platinum. You should stay.
I have to return that, May said, indicating the kayak. She looked at her phone.
In about 8 minutes?
She stood up, and the man stood up and took her cup, setting his own cup inside hers.
You think you can get back across the bay in 8 minutes?
I'll try,
May said, and stood. The woman let out a loud tisk.
I can't believe she's leaving already. I liked her.
She's not dead, dear. She's still with us,
the man said. He helped May into the kayak and untied it.
Be polite.
May dipped her hand into the bay and wet the back of her neck.
Fly away, traitor,
the woman said. The man rolled his eyes.
Sorry.
It's okay. Thanks for the wine, May said. I'll come back again.
That'd be swell,
the woman said, though she seemed finished with May. It was as if, for a moment, she thought May was one kind of person, but now, knowing she was another, she could part with her. She could give her back to the world. May paddled toward the shore, her head feeling very light, the wine putting a crooked smile on her face, and only then did she realize how long she'd been free of thoughts of her parents, of Mercer, of the pressures at work. The wind picked up, now heading west, and she paddled with it recklessly, spray everywhere, soaking her legs and face and shoulders. She felt so strong, her muscles growing bolder with every splash of cold water. She loved it all, seeing the free-range boats get closer, the caged yachts appear and take on names, and finally, the beach takes shape with Walt, waiting at the waterline. On Monday, when she got to work and logged on, there were 100 or so second-screen messages. From Annie,
we missed you Friday night.
Jared,
you missed a great bash.
Dan,
bummed you weren't at the Sunday celebration.
May searched her calendar and realized there had been a party on Friday, open to everyone in the Renaissance. Sunday had been a barbecue for newbies, the newbies that had arrived in the 2 weeks she'd been at the Circle.
Busy day, Dan wrote. See me ASAP.
He was standing in the corner of his office, facing the wall. She knocked lightly and, without turning, he raised his index finger, asking for a moment. May watched him, assuming he was on a call, and stood patiently, silently, until she realized he was using his retinals and wanted a blank background. She'd been seeing circlers occasionally doing this, facing walls so the images on their retinal displays could be seen more clearly. Now finished, he swirled to May, flashing a friendly and quick dissolving smile.
You weren't able to come yesterday?
Sorry, I was with my folks. My dad,
great event. I think you were the only noob absent, but we can talk about it later. For now, I need to ask you a favor. We've had to bring on a lot of new help, given how fast things are expanding now, so I wondered if you could help me with some of the new arrivals.
Of course.
I think it'll be a cinch for you. Let me show you. We'll head back to your desk. Renata?
Renata followed them, carrying a small monitor about the size of a notebook. She installed it at May's desk and left.
Okay, so ideally you'll be doing what Jared used to do with you, remember? Whenever there's a stumper and it needs to be bounced up to a more seasoned person, you'll be there. You're the veteran now. Does that make sense?
It does.
Now, the other thing is that I want the newbies to be able to ask you questions as they work. The easiest way will be on this screen.
He pointed to the small screen that had been placed under her main monitor.
You see something appear here, you know it's from someone in your pod, okay?
He turned on the new screen and typed out a question, "May help me," on his tablet, and the words appeared on this new fourth screen.
Does that seem easy enough?
It does.
Good. So the newbies will be here after Jared trains them. He's doing it en masse as we speak. There will be 12 new people here by about 11 a.m., okay?
Dan thanked her and left. The load was heavy until 11, but her rating was 98. There were a handful of sub-100s and two lower 90s that she followed up on, and in most cases, the customers corrected their rating to 100. At 11, she looked up to see Jared leading a group into the room,
all of them seeming very young, all of them stepping carefully, as if afraid to wake some unseen infant. Jared positioned each of them at a desk, and the room, which had been utterly empty for weeks, was nearly full in a matter of minutes. Jared stood on a chair.
"Okay, everyone," he said. "This is by far our quickest onboarding process and our quickest training session and our most maniacally fast first day, but I know you all can handle it. And I especially know you can handle it because I'll be here all day to help. And May will be here too. May, can you stand up?"
May stood, but it was obvious that few of the newbies in the room could see her.
How about standing on your chair?"
Jared asked, and May did so, straightening her skirt, feeling very silly and visible and hoping she would not fall.
"The two of us will be here all day to answer questions and take stumpers. If you have a stumper, just forward it, and it'll be routed to whichever of us has the lightest load. If you have a question, same thing. Send it through the channel I showed you in the orientation, and it'll go to one of us. Between me and May, you'll be covered. Everyone feel good?"
No one moved or said a word.
"Good. I'll open the chute again, and we'll go till 12:30 today. Lunch will be shorter today to account for the training and all, but we'll make it up to you on Friday. Everyone ready?"
No one seemed ready.
"Go!"
And Jared jumped down, and May climbed down, arranged herself again, and was immediately 30 queries behind. She started on her first, and within a minute she had a question on her fourth screen, the one for newbies. "Customer wants their entire payment record from last year. Available? And where?" May directed the newbie to the right folder, then returned to the query in front of her. She continued this way, being pulled away from her own work every few minutes by a newbie question, until 12:30, when she saw Jared again, standing again on a chair.
"Whoa, whoa,"
he said.
"That's lunch. Intense. Intense, right? But we did it. Our overall average is at 93, which is normally not so good, but okay considering the new systems and increased flow. Congratulations. Get some food, some fuel, and see you at 1 p.m. May, see me when you can?"
He jumped down again and was at May's desk before she could get to his. His expression was one of friendly concern.
"You haven't gone to the clinic."
"Me?
Is that true?"
"I guess so."
"You were supposed to have gone your first week."
"Oh.
They're waiting. Can you go today?"
"Sure. Now?"
No, we're too swamped right now, as you can see. How about at 4? I can handle the last shift. And by the afternoon, all of these newbies will be better honed. Did you have fun so far today?"
"Sure."
"Stressed?"
"Well, it adds a new layer to things."
It does. And there will be more layers, I want to assure you. I know someone like you would get bored of just the regular customer experience stuff, so next week we'll hook you up with a different aspect of the job. I think you'll love it."
He glanced at his bracelet and saw the time.
"Oh, crap. You should go eat. I'm literally taking food out of your mouth. Go. You have 22 minutes.
May found a pre-made sandwich in the closest kitchen and ate at her desk. She scrolled through the third screen social feed, looking for anything urgent or needing a reply. She found and responded to 31 messages, feeling satisfied that she'd given careful attention to all those that required it. The afternoon was a runaway train, with the questions from the newbies constant, contrary to the assurances of Jared, who was in and out throughout the afternoon, leaving the room a dozen times, talking on his phone with great intensity. May dealt with the doubled flow, and by 3:48 had a personal score of 96. The pod's average was 94. Not bad, she thought, considering the addition of 12 new people and having to help them for much of 3 hours single-handedly. When 4 o'clock came around, she knew she was expected at the clinic and hoped Jared had remembered. She stood, found him looking her way, and he gave her a thumbs up. She left. The clinic's lobby was really not a lobby at all. It looked more like a cafe, with circlers talking in pairs, a wall of beautifully arrayed health foods and health drinks, and a salad bar featuring vegetables grown on campus, and a wall-mounted scroll featuring a recipe for paleo soup. May didn't know who to approach. There were 5 people in the room, 4 of them working on tablets, 1 fully retinal, standing in the corner. There was nothing like the standard window through which a medical administrative's face would have greeted her.
"May?"
She followed the voice to the face of a woman with short black hair, dimples in both cheeks, smiling at her.
You ready now?
May was led down a blue hallway and into a room that looked more like a designer kitchen than an examination room. The dimpled woman left her there, showing her to an overstuffed chair. May sat in it, then stood, drawn by the cabinets lining the walls. She could see horizontal lines as fine as thread, delineating where one drawer ended and the next began, but there were no knobs or handles. She ran her hand across the surface, barely registering the hairline gaps. Above the cabinets was a steel strip, and engraved in it were the words, "To heal, we must know. To know, we must share." The door opened, and May startled.
"Hi, May,"
a face said as it floated, gorgeous and smiling, toward her.
"I'm Dr. Villalobos."
May shook the doctor's hand, mouth agape. The woman was too glamorous for this room, for May. She was no more than 40, with a black ponytail and luminous skin. Elegant reading glasses hung from her neck, briefly followed the line of her cream-colored jacket, and rested on her ample chest. She was wearing 2-inch heels.
"I'm so glad to see you today, May."
May didn't know what to say. She arrived at, "Thanks for having me," and immediately felt like an idiot.
"No, thank you for coming," the doctor said. "We have everyone come in, usually in their first week, so we were getting worried about you. Is there any reason you delayed this long?"
No, just busy." May scanned the doctor for physical flaws, finally finding a mole on her neck, a single tiny hair protruding from it.
"Too busy for your health? Don't say that."
The doctor had her back turned to May, preparing some kind of drink. She turned and smiled.
"So this is really just an introductory exam, a basic checkup we give to all new staff members here at the Circle, okay? And first of all, we're a prevention emphasis clinic. In the interest of keeping our Circlers healthy of mind and body, we provide wraparound wellness services. Does that square with what you've been told?"
"It does. I have a friend who's worked here for a couple years. She says the care is incredible."
"Well, that's nice to hear. Who's your friend?"
"Annie Allerton."
"Oh, that's right. That was in your intake. Who doesn't love Annie? Tell her hello. But I guess I can do that myself. She's in my rotation, so I see her every other week. She told you the checkups are biweekly."
"So that's," the doctor smiled,
"every 2 weeks. That's the wellness component. If you come here only when there's a problem, you never get ahead of things. The biweekly checkups involve diet consultations, and we monitor any variances in your overall health. This is key for early detection, for calibrating any meds you might be on, for seeing any problems a few miles away, as opposed to after they've run you over. Sound good?"
May thought of her dad, how late they'd realized his symptoms were MS.
"It does," she said. "And all the data we generate here is available to you online. Everything we do and talk about, and of course all your past records. You signed the form when you started that allowed us to bring in all your other doctors' information, so finally you'll have it all in one place, and it's accessible to you, to us. And we can make decisions, see patterns, see potential issues, given our access to the complete picture."
"You want to see it?" the doctor asked, and then activated a screen on the wall. May's entire medical history appeared before her in lists and images and icons. Dr. Villalobos touched the wall screen, opening folders and moving images, revealing the results of every medical visit she'd ever had, back to her first checkup before starting kindergarten.
"How's that knee?"
the doctor asked. She'd found the MRI May had done a few years ago. May had opted not to get ACL surgery. Her previous insurance didn't cover it.
"It's functional," May said.
"Well, if you want to take care of it, let me know. We do that here at the clinic. It would take an afternoon and, of course, would be free. The Circle likes its employees to have operational knees." The doctor turned from the screen to smile at May, practiced but convincing.
"Piecing together some of this stuff when you were very young was a challenge, but from here on out, we'll have near-complete information. Every 2 weeks, we'll do blood work, cognitive tests, reflexes, a quick eye exam, and a rotating retinue of more exotic tests, like MRIs and such."
May couldn't figure it out.
But how is this affordable for you guys? I mean, the cost of an MRI alone.
Well, prevention is cheap, especially compared to finding some stage 4 lump when we could have found